the proposed framework 23 regulatory changes, and this is not an opportunity for the council to revisit measures in framework 23. It is to deem the regulations. So this is the first time the council will have the opportunity as a full council to do that, and I think it is a good opportunity for us. Maybe somebody could close the door. Thank you. I think that will make it easier for us to sort of focus here. So I'm going to turn it over to Emily Gilbert from the regional office. She's going to review the draft regulations for us, and then I do have a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Mary Beth. I've promised to make this short and sweet, so I'm going to do my best to do both. I know there's a lot to cover today. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Emily Gilbert. I've been around for a few years on the Scala plan, and I think many of you know this already, but Pete Christopher is now my team's supervisor, but I wanted to let everyone know that I'm still available to answer all your Scala questions. So I just wanted to briefly go through the deeming process that the council has done. So the Magnuson Act requires that the council deem draft regulations before they're implemented, and due primarily to timing constraints and the availability of the draft regulations, the councils typically deem the regulations in the following way. My clicker doesn't work. Thank you. Okay. So we tend to send the council chair and executive director a letter with the drafted regulations, and then the executive director reviews them and makes a recommendation to the council chair. The council chair, on behalf of the full council, then makes a determination whether or not to deem the draft regulations. Hold on. And if they're approved, the executive director sends a deeming letter to us. And occasionally the deeming letter may include other suggestions that they'd like us to put in place before anything is implemented. So this time around, because of the review timeline for Framework 23 and that it falls between two council meetings, we were able to draft the regulations so we could bring them to you today for review. Also, because Framework 23 is relatively limited in scope, covering essentially four issues, it's probably easier to explain that in 15 minutes than it would be to explain larger actions and the regulatory changes in those. So on November 1st, there's a letter sent with a companion guide with track changes for all of the sections that would be updated for Framework 23. Hopefully you've had a chance to look at that. I'll be referring to those pages throughout this presentation, so I won't be going through every single example of where we changed a regulation. But this is how we'll run through this, covering the first four topics of Framework 23. And then also I wanted to discuss briefly some other proposed regulatory changes that we would be doing under 305D of the MSA. So starting off with Yellowtail. Just as a background or refresher, Framework 23 would be replacing the Amendment 15 Yellowtail Flounder AM closure schedule with what's proposed in the 23 document for both Georges Bank and Southern New England Mid-Atlantic. And I've just noted the companion guide pages there for you. Essentially, it's been copied and pasted from the Framework 23 document, so feel free to take a look and make sure it's what you remember seeing there. The second thing with Yellowtail is that Framework 23 would add flexibility for the RA to reevaluate any AM overage based on the proposed closure schedule that is in Framework 23. And as a refresher, if updates to the January 15th projection indicate that the amount of estimated Yellowtail flounder catch in the fishery for a given year is higher or lower than initially estimated, the appropriate adjustment would be made mid-year. And again, it wouldn't be changing what the AM schedule is or anything about the AMs. It would just be going back to the AM schedule that would be in the regulations. So moving on to Northern Gulf of Maine, Framework 23 proposed to allow Northern Gulf of Maine vessels to fish exclusively in state waters of the Northern Gulf of Maine and have those landings not apply to the federal Northern Gulf of Maine tax. So to make changes in the regs, I put up two examples. The first one demonstrates that the text of it has been changed to state that Northern Gulf of Maine vessel is deemed to be fishing in federal waters of the Northern Gulf of Maine and will have its landings applied against the TAC unless the vessel has specifically declared into a state-only Northern Gulf of Maine fishery and thus is fishing exclusively in state waters of the Northern Gulf of Maine. The second example goes into detail about the actual how to declare that trip, and that if the Northern Gulf of Maine vessel intends to fish any part of a Northern Gulf of Maine trip in federal waters, it cannot declare a state-only trip. It would have to declare a federal. What I'm assuming right now is we would just have an additional VMS code, that the original one that's there now would be applicable to IFQ vessels regardless of fishing in state waters or federal waters, since they're not included in this exemption. And then there'd be another code for Northern Gulf of Maine vessels fishing exclusively in state waters. There are a few other examples in the companion guide that I've included there of where similar changes were made. So Framework 23 stated that Northern Gulf of Maine permitted vessels cannot declare and fish in state waters anymore after the federal Northern Gulf of Maine TAC has been fully harvested. So the regs reflect that intent as well. And I just put an example up there that says, once Northern Gulf of Maine hard TAC is reached, a vessel issued a Northern Gulf of Maine permit may no longer declare a state-only Northern Gulf of Maine trip and fish for scallops. Other examples are located on the following pages. I also wanted to point out that I made an addendum because my original track changes weren't perfect. So the track changes to the Northern Gulf of Maine proposed regulations include the two-page addendum that was sent out a few days after the November 1st letter. Moving on to VMS. So Framework 23 proposes to allow scallop vessels, and that being limited access, IFQ, Northern Gulf of Maine, to declare scallop trips from outside of a designated port, but prior to crossing the VMS demarc line. This would still require that a scallop vessel declare an initial trip from port, but that would be a declare out of fishery or DOF code. As I was developing the regs, I realized that a distinction needed to be made between the DOF code that's currently used when vessels want to target other species that they're permitted for, and a DOF code to actually steam closer to scallop fishing grounds with the intent to switch to a scallop fishing declaration. So all of those regs that touched on the VMS topic are on the following pages listed on the slide. And I'll just give an example, and of course, you can't see it very well, and you don't have to read the whole thing. The white text at the top is just what is in the regs currently, and it's just illustrating that there's still the option for scallop vessels to declare a trip from port when that makes sense for IFQ, Northern Gulf of Maine, access area trips. The yellow text was also in the regs, and that's just indicating that the other option is to declare out of fishery in order to fish for other species that they're permitted for, and the red text is just going through or clarifying that scallop vessels also have the option of declaring out of the fishery from port in order to steam closer to scallop fishing grounds, but that the scallop trip must be declared prior to crossing the VMS demarc line in order for the vessel to fish for scallops. The TDD regulations are next. So the place where the TDD regs are located are in 64851. Other than that, there's one prohibition that was included, but everything is primarily right there on pages 23, 24 of the companion guide. In regards to where, when, and which vessels, and first of all, I included a a cross-reference to chain mats. I know oftentimes I've spoken with people about where they can find the chain mat regs, so I just cross-referenced them in this section. So the idea would be you could have all of your turtle gear restrictions in one spot, or at least know how to find them. The next paragraph is just the where, when, and which vessels, taken from framework 23, and so May 1 through October 31st, any limited access scallop vessel using a dredge, regardless of dredge size or permit category, or any limited access general category IFQ vessel fishing with a dredge with a width of 10 and a half feet or greater that's fishing for scallops west of 71 degrees would have to be using a TDD. When it comes to the gear modifications, this is essentially copy and pasted from Framework 23, but it just goes through the five modifications, the first being that the cutting bar must be located in front of the depressor plate. The second is the angle between the front edge of the cutting bar and the top of the dredge frame must be less than or equal to 45 degrees. I tried to include an example of what was the top of the dredge frame in an attempt to clarify, but I've heard from some people that that doesn't make sense, so I wouldn't include that. And the third being all bail bars must be removed except for the outer bail, single or double, and the center support beam, leaving an otherwise unobstructed space between the cutting bar and forward bail, and that the center support beam must be less than 6 inches wide. There are two other modifications. The fourth is that the struts must be spaced 12 inches apart or less from each other. And the fifth, unless exempted, there's a bump out requirement that would be 12 inches, or it must exceed 12 inches in length. And then the final paragraph there just indicates what vessels are exempted from the bump out requirement as stated in 23. And that would be limited access vessels that use a dredge with a width less than 10 and a half feet, don't have to have the bump out, and would have to just use a TDD with the first four requirements. I just wanted to include a picture here of all of the measurements that come out of those regs just to make sure everyone's on the same page. I realize it's a little bit small, and some of them are pretty basic. There's, for the center beam, the width of the center beam is pretty straightforward, as are the strut spacings of equal to or less than 12 inches. When it comes to the bump out, I'm not implying that it has to be on the outer side of the bail, but it's just that it's essentially coming from that 12-inch mark is coming from where the cutting bar hits the dredge frame out. And with the 45-degree angle, that's actually the angle that's located right there. So if anyone else had a different opinion, we can certainly talk about it. Okay, finally, I just wanted to take a moment to go through the other proposed reg changes. We're not asking the council to deem these, but I wanted to take the opportunity to just show you what kind of changes we mean. So the Magnuson Act gives NIMS the authority to adjust or clarify regulations through rulemaking to carry out any of the approved measures in an FMP. And occasionally, we have included proposed reg adjustments to remove or update outdated terminology and cross-references, as well as update regulations to clarify the intent of them. And these changes are described in the preamble, but I know that sometimes it's not easy to find in the reg text what they are. So in the companion guide, I indicated in the margins and comments any place where this came up so you can see what types of changes we made. But just really quickly, I'll give you some examples. Changes to terminology, there are still some places in the regs that refer to TAC where it should refer to ABC, ACL. So I included those. All those examples are listed above. And then there's some other examples for terminology on the other pages. In terms of changes to references, as regs are developed, it's sometimes hard to catch where all the references should be and when they should be updated. So I just took a look and identified any spots where references have changed slightly. And so I included changes on those pages. When it comes to proposing to remove unclear or unnecessary text, just wanted to offer an example. There's currently two prohibitions that reference Northern Gulf of Maine and incidental permits being able to possess more than their possession limits if assigned an industry-funded observer. And, of course, when you think about it, those two permit types aren't part of the industry-funded observer program, so I got rid of that to clarify or make it more clear. In terms of outdated text, there's still some references to the quarterly TAC for general category vessels, and that no longer has existed since the IFQ program was implemented, so I identified those and removed them. And then in terms of clarifying the intent of regulations, here's one example. The observer regulations were clarified to demonstrate how providers should charge general category vessels fishing in access areas, regardless of whether observer compensation is or is not available. The regs right now just go through an explanation of limited access vessels, but because a few years ago through, I think it was Framework 21, we changed the way general category vessels were given compensation. It was at a trip level versus a per day level. We just offered some examples there to clarify what would happen for Gen Cat, not just limited access. There's some other examples. I don't want to take up your time now, but if you have any questions about other examples of changes that we made, they're on those pages and identified in the margins. So that's it.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a motion that I provided to Karen. The council staff has had an opportunity to review the regulations and express any concerns. I think we're all set there. Deidre is indicating that the regulations do meet the intent of the framework. Certainly, if people had questions. One issue did come up, and that is the definition for the new turtle dredge, and that's reflected at the end of my motion. People, when setting the dredge out, need to have the ability to flare it so that it will fish correctly, and the way it currently reads, with no impediments, with this additional language, allows just a bar not to exceed 12 inches, and we do have pictures if people would like to see it, so that they can, you know, use a line and guide the dredge for flaring and moving it away from the vessel so that it can you can handle the dredge safely and have it fish correctly. So this is my motion. I make the motion as the chair of this call-up committee. It is not a committee motion, so it would require a second.
Seconded by Rodney. I am going to go to the public for any comments. Drew.
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. We strongly support this motion. This is an issue that's one of these things that in all the talk of the turtle dredge that it was never fully discussed about the issue of flaring, and there are some examples right there. So what it's talking about is just this, a small piece of metal to basically keep the rope from sliding all the way up to the gooseneck as when the dredge is being flared as it's first set out from the boat to make sure it doesn't flip over. It's a safety issue, allowing the crews to safely handle these very large and very heavy dredges. And as you can see, it in no way defeats the purpose of leaving a large opening for the turtles to pass through and over the dredge. So we think it's consistent with everything that's been done, and just want to make sure that the language that says without obstruction, that it's understood that this small little appendage for flaring is allowed, just so there's no confusion in enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Peter.
Thank you. My name is Peter Hughes. I'm with Atlantic Cape Fisheries in Cape May, New Jersey. It's kind of an inherent safety issue also. When a vessel deploys a dredge, it kind of tends to drop kind of straight down in the water. What this allows is a rope to be attached so that the dredge can be flared out away from the boat, and then the dredges get set out and go behind the boat. And they don't have flips and back flips and stuff like that, and they don't just drop straight down into the water. When that happens, the dredge has to be brought back up on the boat, Men are utilized to corral that dredge in, and this just provides less opportunity for a man to get between a dredge and the safe deployment of that dredge. Thank you.
Any other comments? Back to the council. Mark?
I just have one question. I will send some pictures, not only of the bar that was shown on the screen there, but also the use of a plate welded in the corner of the bump out in that space of the angle formed by the cutting bar and the bump out. It's not clear to me whether or not the definition or the motion would cover that type of appendage as well. Could you clarify that?
I think I'll defer to Emily as well, but if it's not an obstruction, if it's a plate on the bump out and it doesn't, you know, impede the opening in the bail area, I wouldn't think it was a problem, but perhaps Emily would be better to speak to it.
Sure. I mean, right now, and this is draft text that we took from Framework 23 that was reviewed by the AP as well. But right now, yeah, Drew had showed me a picture of that before, and right now the way that it's worded, it wouldn't be included because it says essentially just the outer bail bar and the center bar and nothing in between. So.
I can pass this around, but he's talking about these plates that cover up the area that's created by the bump out, and these plates allow for the dredge to sort of plane and flare and go down on its own. It's not our intention or our belief that these are covered by this exception because, frankly, these plates cover up the area that's supposed to be created, the void that's supposed to be created by the bump out, so it kind of defeats the purpose of the bump out. So as the Fisheries Survival Fund, we've agreed that this doesn't really meet the intention of the new dredge design, and so it's something that will have to be removed going forward. So that's...
Thank you for that, Drew. Does that resolve your question, Mark? Anyone else? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Sixteen in favor. Opposed? Abstention. One. 16-01. The motion carries. Mary Beth, is there anything else?
That's all for this agenda item, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Emily. We will now move into SBRM. Paul BRM.